I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey there, wrestling fans. It is a CM Jew, the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and you can't teach that. And I am back with another brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 73, and who needs to review something in February anyways, when you can just sit back, relax, and get rested and prepare for WrestleMania month? Which is a great excuse for I got completely bogged down with schoolwork and forgot to review anything. That, and it was hard to choose because there's really not much that goes on in the month of February. I wanted to stay away from WWE, and unfortunately, WCW does not have many choices other than Super Bowl, and I just couldn't pick what I wanted to start with as far as Super Bowl, because there are many good pay-per-views that I want to watch. There was, I believe it's 97, where Piper faced Hogan, that Super Bowl, and of course, watching WCW in its prime is always at least enjoyable, as opposed to towards its demise when it was horrible. But then you have sort of the mid-90s when Hogan came before the NWO, and sort of the influx of older stars along with older WCW stars, which would soon be going on their way. You know, it's, by the way, very fun to watch some of those WCW shows and, you know, watch people who end up becoming stars in the WWE during the Monday Night Wars. It's always fun. And then, of course, there was the very early Super Bowls, in particular the first one where it was Takuya Fujima. I know I'm mispronouncing the name because I don't have it in front of me. If I had it in front of me, I'd be able to say. I mean, it's not like I've practiced it over and over again, like Los Ingobernables de Japón, you know. I can now just, like, say it off of the tip of my tongue, and yes, I will continue to use that joke over and over again, because I can now say Los Ingobernables de Japón, and you can't without reading it. So, Los Ingobernables de Japón! And yes, I am a fan. But Fujima's match against Ric Flair in St. Petersburg at the Bayfront Center, which I've actually been in, that's where I graduated from. Our graduation ceremony was held inside the Bayfront Center And if I had more knowledge of history, I would have been probably more amazed. Like say, next to my friend Sergio, who was a fellow friend on a football team, and I'm like, dude, you know, like, this is the place where Ric Flair faced Vegeta for the NWA World Heavyweight title. And I'm like, who? That's all along with it, because I actually haven't told you what we're reviewing yet. So that's sort of the excuse I have right now for why nothing got brought out in February. Not that WWE's pay-per-views, mind you, did anything either. I would like to talk about Fastlane, but you should check out the... What is today's date? As I'm recording it on the date, but the March 10th, 2017 episode of the WrestleCast, I will say everything about Fastlane there, since I'm going to be guest starring on that episode. So what am I reviewing today? Well, like I said, we're starting WrestleMania month, and it's always hard to choose because you always have the ones you've already done. You know, kind of you choose the ones you like when you start out, when you do podcasts and things like that. So there are many choices, and you don't want to do ones that are close together. You know, I like to spread out my picks. So I like to do one towards the beginning, and this year I decided to choose a WrestleMania which featured a gigantic explosion. Yes, that's right. I'm talking about when the Mega Powers exploded. And the main event featured the WWF World Heavyweight Champion, Macho Man Randy Savage, defend his title against his former friend, Hulk Hogan. And they didn't even need a festival of friendship to break up either. Ladies and gentlemen, we are reviewing WrestleMania 5 right here on CMG's Wrestling Reviews. And before I get into that proper, though, that whole festival of friendship joke reminds me, you know, like I said, Fastlane has happened. I will give my views on Fastlane on the WrestleCast, which is later tonight as of this recording, which I'm sure that's pissing some people off. You know, well, you're here, tell us it now. But I more want to focus on, we are now officially on, firmly on the road to WrestleMania, and we now pretty much know everything that's going to happen. Not just because of what happened at Fastlane, but also what's been happening at SmackDown. So, the current card, as I see it, not that I have anything in front of me, any notes, but, you know, it's going to be Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. We're going to have Undertaker probably versus Roman Reigns. At least they started that this past Monday night. They've also started on Tuesday night the beginnings of the match nobody wants, AJ Styles versus Shane McMahon. We are more than likely going to have that intergender tag match between, I almost, by the way, called him Hogan, but Cena and Nikki Bella versus Miz and Marius. We are probably going to have, not probably, we are going to have Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt for the WWE World Heavyweight title. Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin, probably for the Intercontinental title. Jericho versus Owens versus, Jericho versus Owens for the United States title. Let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 7 matches right there. There's going to be a women's title match, probably triple well, in fact, there is going to be a triple threat. Bayley, Sasha, Charlotte, that's 8. So that's 8 matches I think we know firmly right now. And maybe a 9th, because there's probably going to be a triple threat for the tag team titles from Raw, featuring a club, Enzo and Cass, and Sheamus and Cesaro, if they don't turn it into a one-on-one contest between the club and one of those two at WrestleMania. So there's, I think, a very high pot that we're going to have 9 matches. And I have to say, I'm not highly excited for this WrestleMania. You know, it's going to be in Orlando. It's going to be a hot crowd. I know that. But I'm just not excited. Now, at the same time, I also think back to the past 2 WrestleManias. I was somewhat excited for last year's because of the big stage and the possibility I thought a lot of the matches had, and it turned out to be a dud. And I also remember that WrestleMania 31 had such low expectations. That was the one that took place in San Francisco, in the San Francisco Bay Area sort of area. And that turned out to be one hell of a WrestleMania, with wonderful wrestling and just great pacing and everything. Very enjoyable. So, by that stick, you know, this, and mind you, we've been having good WrestleMania, bad WrestleMania, good WrestleMania, bad WrestleMania. So we're due for a good WrestleMania, but you just don't know. And you don't know, and unfortunately, there are certain, well, let's call it what it is. There's Goldberg versus Lesnar, and I don't think anybody's going to enjoy that. Everybody knows what's going to happen. Lesnar's going to win. And unless they do a long, sustained match, which is really not Goldberg's cup of tea, everybody's just going to hate it. And it's, there's going to be no suspense. It's going to go on last. It's going to have 5 minutes to have a match. And it's, I would like to see WWE surprise me. I really, really would like to see WWE surprise me. You know? But, and I guess the part that I hate most about it is that we're going to put the title once again back on Brock Lesnar. Why? Lesnar cheats, robs somebody of a payday. I mean, mind you, has to cheat the winning of UFC, does all that garbage, and his reward is, you know, getting the title eventually. It's, and people bitch about Hogan. So, needless to say, we're on the road to WrestleMania. There are some things that I think are going to be part of the WrestleMania. I think the undercard has an opportunity, if they step up in this WrestleMania, to take a brass ring and shove it down Vinnie Mac's throat and Kevin Dunn's throat, and, you know, like, we should be the stars of WrestleMania and have a chance to prove it. And they're going to have that opportunity. It's going to be given to them by the fans in Orlando. But it's hard. You know, when you realize that Samoa Joe and Cena were on the table for WrestleMania, when, you know, a AJ Styles Bray Wyatt match would have been highly entertaining for the title, you know. Mind you, I'm also the person that really wanted Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens for the Universal title. So it's like, they had opportunities, they decided not to. Yeah, I'm not excited for this year's WrestleMania, as you can hear. It's very stressful. And it, while it has the opportunity to be a very good WrestleMania, if, you know, amazing matches happen, it also has chances to be a dud like last year. And, you know, speaking of duds, that's what many people have described what we're reviewing today, WrestleMania 5. A dud, as far as WrestleManias are concerned. And so we're going to get into the review, and we're going to find out if, in fact, the explosion of the Mega Powers at WrestleMania 5 was a dud. So let's go down the rundown, shall we? We have WrestleMania 5 with the tagline Mega Powers Explode, which took place on April 2nd, 1989 at the Boardwalk. The Boardwalk Hall. Let me start this over again. At the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey, not Trump Tower, which was right next to it, and really all Trump did, which, by the way, is the other reason people are probably groaning for me to review this, because we have to talk about President Dumbledore. But, you know, this is what he does. He buys brands, and he plastered his name all over it and called it Trump Tower. It wasn't Trump Tower, it was Boardwalk Hall. But it took place at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Here, with an attendance of 18,946. Your co-commentators were Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. And ladies and gentlemen, let's get into WrestleMania 5. Where the Mega Powers explode. When it comes crashing down and it hurts inside, you gotta take a stand, it don't have to hide. If you hurt my friends, then you hurt my pride. I gotta be a man. Welcome back to Let's Get Right Into It. We're really to get into WrestleMania 5, we have to cop something, and that is times of all the matches. Really, the downfall of this pay-per-view, and in fact of this WrestleMania, are the wrestling times. All but two matches on this card, and there's 14 matches on the card. And I'm not saying 14 matches including dark show matches or pre-show matches that weren't shown. I'm talking WrestleMania 5 showcased 14 matches for a total time of 3 hours and 20 minutes. And yes, it felt all of the 3 hours and 20 minutes. There are 14 matches on the card and all but 2 are under 10 minutes. And those two are the main event between Hogan and Savage. And the third match, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, versus the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Though, to be completely honest, by the slimmest margins is Beefcake and DiBiase over 10 minutes, as their match was officially counted in at 10 minutes and 1 second. Now, I know this is also not including entrance times and everything, but still. Really, it's short, and it was about 10 minutes. So, pretty much, the only match that was really of any substantial time and length was Hogan versus Savage. And that didn't even go 20 minutes. That pretty much only went 18 minutes. I mean, if you round up, it went 18 minutes. 20 minutes if you include the entrances, which were interesting. I mean, it also, this WrestleMania falls into the same standpoint of it's repeating. You know, WrestleMania 4 took place here. And then they, you know, Trump basically bought WrestleMania to be brought back again. And so we've seen these entrances before. We've seen all of this. It looked fresh a year ago. It didn't, or it doesn't look fresh now. And by year ago, I meant, like, as far as the pay-per-views are concerned, like, when you watch WrestleMania 4, there is something actually about that entrance where it looks very interesting. Here, it didn't. It just didn't. And it looked like they just reused a WrestleMania set. You know? Still, you had that going against it. So one of the things I'm going to do is, I actually think there are a number of matches that could have been cut from this card. And one of my overall opinions is that if you had cut these matches and given all the other matches the time that these matches took, some of the matches are going to cut out, like, are not even a minute long, but there are some matches, like, I thought you could have cut out, and if you would have given some of the other matches on the undercard more time, because there are some good matches here, but even the good matches, again, they suffer from not having enough time. So, with that caveat out of the way, let's get started. We start with our first match, as Hercules faces King Haku with Bobby the Brain Heenan in a single match. Now, this I actually thought was a really, not really good, but a good opener. I need to stop using that word, really. I'm going to sound like, what's his name from Star Trek? Like, we're here for a really good time. It was a decent, if not good, opener. It was a blow-off to a story, as Hercules had been kicked out of the Heenan family. And, Hercules and Haku had great rapport, very good back and forth. And I wrote, honestly, I did enjoy it. Hercules could have better music. There also seemed to be a thing to where the bad guys didn't have any music. Actually, I take that back. Ted DiBiase did have music. Like, very few of the bad guys had music. Macho Man, DiBiase, but, like, and King Haku had music, but, like, others didn't. Like, Twin Towers, they got jobber into it. Like, and that was another thing. Like, there are, like, a lot of times where, like, the Brainbusters or Twin Towers or others got jobber entrances. Or, like, Rhythm and Blues, which is Honky Tonk Man and Griff Valentine, you could barely hear their music at all. And it's like, the music is the great part. It's what gets you pumped up. Like, when you hear Real American or Macho Madness, it's like, it gets you pumped up for those wrestlers coming out. Which, of course, you heard those themes, but, like, just others. Like, they got jobber entrances, and it's like, this doesn't feel right. But, I thought it was a decent opening match. And again, like I said, it blew off a story where Hercules got his revenge on Bobby Heenan for being kicked out of the family. The next match is another match which I think could stay in, as it was the debut of the Rockers, which is Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, as they faced off against the Twin Towers. Again, this was big men and power versus speed and technique. And that always creates a good contrast to each other. And this also was a very fun match. The Rockers were very fast, all over the place, very entertaining. At the same time, Akeem, Big Boss Man, showcased great examples of their power, being hit with so many moves but not going down. The Twin Towers pick up the win with a splash, I believe. And, it unfortunately goes to, like, a lot of these matches, there's really not much that's memorable about them. Other than, like, hey, this was the Rockers' debut. And they lost in their debut at WrestleMania. Mind you, their WrestleMania debut, and they lost, in this case, their debut, against the Twin Towers. But again, they were very entertaining. So I've really much enjoyed this match. Our next match is another match I would technically keep in, but only because Ted DiBiase is supposed to be one of the biggest heels of the company at this time. And it was, it had sort of a great, not that it had a tagline against it, but like, these were both wrestlers that used sleeper holds or some type of sleeper submission. So it was sort of a battle of the sleepers, which Gorilla Monsoon talked about constantly. And that is Brutus the Barber Beefcake versus Ted DiBiase. There are a couple things wrong with this match. Now, like I said, I would keep this match in only upon the technical standpoint of, well, that, again, DiBiase was one of the biggest heels. And again, this was the growing babyface versus one of the biggest heels, and it could be a good match. The other caveat, though, for it staying is it would have had a different ending because it ends in a double countout. And it's like, really? Really? Like, there is a lot of interference and a lot of screwy finishes overall in this WrestleMania. From DiBiase to Strike to the Brainbuster Strikeforce match, the Andre the Giant match, Rhythm of Blue versus Heart Foundation, Ultimate Warrior versus Rick Rude. All these had like a lot of cool. Not that they didn't have definite finishes like DiBiase and Beefcake did, but there was a lot of interference throughout the night. There was apparently a lot of eye gouging also throughout the point, because at one point, Jesse Ventura says, the move of the night seems to be the eye gouge. Because everybody was doing it. And it became laughable. Like, everybody eye gouged. Heels, faces, everybody. So, it's... Again, like I said, it's technically the only other match that goes more than 10 minutes at 10 minutes and 1 second. And I enjoyed it up until the end. Because it's like, I wanted to see a winner, and I didn't get a winner. And it's like, you didn't satisfy me there, Vince. You didn't satisfy me there. Now we come to the first match I would technically throw off the card because it's a squash match for the face. Even though it went almost 10 minutes. The match is the Bushwhackers versus the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers. Jacques and Raymond with Jimmy Hart. Why are they on this card? Like, it's a Bushwhacker match. It's a Bushwhacker and it's a Rougeau brother. And I enjoy the Rougeau brothers, but when they're going up against a team that is of their skills. But this was them, the technical wizards, just throwing around the Bushwhackers until they made a mistake to look the other way, and then the Bushwhackers hit them with that battering ram. And 1, 2, 3, it's a Bushwhacker match, is what it is. And now, I don't have a problem with the Bushwhackers. I enjoy the Bushwhackers. But in this case, the time of this match could have been given to other people, in particular, the next match. As Mr. Perfect, debuting his iconic singlet in this match, faced the Blue Blazer in a match that would only go about 5.5 minutes. By the way, who is the Blue Blazer under the mask? Some people say he's Owen Hart in his WrestleMania debut, don't you know? But joking aside, yes, it's Owen Hart in his WrestleMania debut, not his Owen Hart, but as the Blue Blazer. And in 5.5 minutes, Mr. Perfect and Owen Hart put on a wonderful match. In fact, this is one of my favorite matches of the night, which begs the question, why am I bitching, you know, about match times when one of the best matches of the night was one of the shortest? But Well, that's because this is what they did with only 5.5 minutes. Think about the type of match they could have put on if they had about 10 more minutes. They would have been the Macho Man Steamboat match of this card. They would have done like Macho Man and Steamboat did at WrestleMania 3, stole the show. Enjoyable. Owen Hart is so athletic. He's wonderful to watch. I really never got to watch Owen Hart in his heyday just because, again, I wasn't watching wrestling during that time. Or at least I wasn't watching WWE wrestling. And I wish I could have seen him because he is absolutely spectacular with the way he flies. The Hurricane Ranas that he does, Frankensteiners. And he was wonderful to watch. And Mr. Perfect is just perfect. Got great charisma. Both of them have great charisma. It was such a wonderful and enjoyable match. I watched it like 3 times. Like, I went back and watched it 3 times. That's how enjoyable it was. Our next match was also enjoyable, if not memorable, but still enjoyable. But you had Demolition, Axe and Smash defending their WWF Tag Team Champions against the Power Pain, the Warlord and Barbarian, and their manager, Mr. Fuji, in a handicap match. Now, it's, of course, fun to see Mr. Fuji back in the ring, being that he was a former WWF Tag Team Champion himself back in the day. Back in the day of Gorilla Monsoon, mind you. So that was fun to see. This overall was an enjoyable match. This is one of the few cases where I think this match is perfect. The tie went perfect. These are two power and brawler type tag teams. I got what I wanted. I very much enjoyed it. There was a great storyline told in the match back and forth. And the ending went perfect with Fuji getting caught with the Powers of Pain knocked out of the ring. And Demolition giving him their finishing move, which leads to the 1-2-3 and the retaining of their titles. So yeah, it's actually a very enjoyable match. It's just not memorable. Like, I enjoyed it as somebody who can enjoy just powerhouse teams like brawling on each other. Yeah, I enjoyed it, but it's not really memorable. And this is where we get into what the real slog of this WrestleMania. Now, I have to add one caveat to this, and that is that I do believe that before the Demolition match, that I'll try to take it. I believe before the Demolition match, because I think it happened right after Mr. Perfect and the Blue Blazer match, that there was a concert. I want to say it was Run DMC. I'm looking for info, but I can't see anything about their concert. It may have been after Demolition, or it may have been before Demolition's match, but there was a concert that went on for like 10, 15 minutes. So you had that, and then you had what would happen after the next two matches, and I'll talk about them simultaneously. You had Dino Bravo versus Ronnie Garvin in a singles match that only went 3 minutes, 6 seconds, and then you had the Brainbusters, Arne Anderson, Tully Blanchard, versus Strikeforce, which is Rick Martel and Tino Santana. And this is, of course, the match where Rick Martel, after accidentally getting hit by his own partner, walks out on him and turns heel and becomes the model Rick Martel. But with all that being said, even with the heel turn by Rick Martel, both of these matches, I think, didn't need to be on this card. Now, I like the Brainbusters. I love Arn Anderson. But at the same time, this is the beginning of a storyline. And, I felt it just could have not been on the card. Like, I felt like WWE could have done, like, a show before WrestleMania. And, like, all these matches I'm taking off, they could have put on there and could have qualified for the show. Because I think I'm taking off, like, six. And you could have taken that time and given it to the other matches and given them at least 4 to 5 more minutes. And the matches would have been a bit more enjoyable, at least. At least from my perspective. So, I like the Brainbusters, but it's like, the first half of the match is Strikeforce dominating them, and then Tino Santana actually hits Martel, and the rest of the match is just waiting for him to leave and Tino Santana to get double teamed for the victory by the Brainbusters. And then, of course, Dino Bravo versus Ronnie Garvin just turns out to be another Dino Bravo squash. And it's like, Dino Bravo versus Ronnie Garvin can be an actually exciting match if given the time, being that, you know, Ronnie Garvin is a, you know, former NWA champion. And it's like, you have two powerhouses going up against each other, and that can be a really interesting match if given the time. But it's not given the proper time. Then really, the same thing can be said for the Brainbuster and Strikeforce, and that's what really hurts it, is that it's not given the proper time, and thus it's, all of the sort of story points of that match are really hurried through. So it goes too fast. So again, take those two matches off, put it on a card that's before WrestleMania, or maybe a pre-show that's taped and shown later. But yeah. And now, before the next match, we did have a memorable moment, as we had a legendary Piper's Pit segment. It's the one featuring Brother Love and Morton Downey Jr., who was a famous talk show host of the late 80s, who, like, tried to, basically, I'm trying to see who to compare him to. He was like a shock jock, late-night TV show host. Like, he would say horrible things. He would get his guests to fight with each other and, like, think a mixture of David Letterman and, I'm trying to think of his name. And Jerry. Jerry, what's his face? And I should remember because he's a fan, but, like, I never watched his show either. But, you know, Jerry, blah, blah, blah. So, but yeah, it's the famous one to where Morton Downey Jr. keeps blowing cigarette smoke and, you know, Roddy Piper's face and, you know, Piper's like, will you please stop blowing smoke in my face? I've been trying to tell you for, like, the nth time. It's like, you know what? That smoke smells good. Give me a smoke. Like, it, you know, as he turns around to kick the smoke out, Piper takes out a fire extinguisher. It's like, hey, Mr. Downey, can you bring me that smoke there for ya? And he goes to bring it around, hits him with the fire extinguisher. Mind you, we've all seen that famous moment, like, replayed time and time again, but that's just the tail end of the Piper Pit. The entire segment is actually very entertaining. Because first you have Brother Love that comes out, mocking Piper in a kilt. And it's like, what is going on? And then Morton Downey Jr. comes on. And then Brother Love and him are going at each other. And it's like, God, these two complete jackwagons. I'm like, won't somebody come out and save us? Then Piper's music hits, and out comes Piper to save us. And it's classic Piper. Like, this is one of the most enjoyable segments on the card, because it's classic Piper in a Piper's Pit segment that is just spectacular. And it's like the back and forth. And then when it's between Piper and Downey, and Downey just keeps trying to piss him off. And it's like, whoo, Piper's going to kill him. He is going to kill him. And when he finally gets his comeuppance, it's very enjoyable. The very funny thing I don't think people recognize is that Morton Downey Jr. actually tried running after Piper after. Like, he was fumbling around the ring, then slipped out the ring as Piper was heading back up the ramp and was trying to run after him to get at him. Which I don't know if he was actually trying to sell it or if he was really mad. Which I guess, you know, give credit to Morton Downey Jr. for, if he was selling. I know selling is this magical term that people think has been long forgotten, but it's not. That brings us to our next match. And another match that I thought could possibly be taken off the card, and in fact, I think it can. Because I think it could have been a match that could, like I said, maybe have a card that takes place the day before, like this takes place on a Sunday, so on April 1st, have there be a separate card, sort of a pre-WrestleMania show at, you know, Boardwalk Hall. And this match could have been its main event. You had Jake the Snake Roberts versus Andre the Giant with Bobby the Brain Heenan with Big John Studd as a special guest. This match doesn't have clearly enough time. This is all toward tail end of Andre the Giant's career. You can see that he's very slow and he's having a hard time to walk around. And again, I don't think they have enough time. Like, as strange as it seems, for there just to be, you know, this qualification was there to protect Andre. And I think maybe if they had been given enough time and not pushed into a tighter window, maybe they could have done something to where Jake Roberts wins and slays a giant. And that would have been a big moment, because Jake Roberts was, like, probably at this time, I would say, third or fourth biggest face in the company. I think that's safe to say. Probably fourth, probably behind Piper, who was still technically retired and had only came back after 2 years doing acting and other stuff. So, yeah. Actually, fifth, because then you have the Ultimate Warrior, which is his match is coming up. So, yeah, I think his match could have been taken. This match could have been taken out. Like, this could have been, like, the main event of that, like, sort of hypothetical other card that would have taken place the day before. I think it actually could have used, as hard as it was for Andre to walk, it could have used the time to maybe give it a better finish. Maybe, and it doesn't have to be a pin, but maybe, you know, he hits him with the DDT and Andre the Giant rolls out, but he's so wobbly that he gets counted out and Jake Roberts get a count out win. You protected both Andre and Jake in that way. Our next match, though, is a match that definitely could have used more time. You had the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, facing Rhythm and Blues, the Honky Tonk Man, and Greg Valentine with Jimmy Hart. Yeah, this match could have used so much more time. Like, and it's enjoyable for what it is, but you sit there and you think, like, wow, this was only 7 minutes 40 seconds. Imagine the type of match they could have had if they had 15 minutes. You know, just basically a little over 7 more minutes. And yeah, this match would have been another match that could have stole the show. And because it's very enjoyable here, it's classic time tag team wrestling. Brett, you know, and Jim start off in control, but then Honky Tonk and Greg get control, and they keep Brett in his corner, or in their corner, until the moment where, you know, I believe it's Honky Tonk Man springs him off the rope, and it's a, there's a go behind by Brett, and it's that, you know, run towards the rope, and then you try for a roll up, but Honky Tonk Man holds onto the rope so he doesn't go through the roll-up. And then Brett, immediately seeing this, sees this as an opportunity to go and finally tag Jim, which he does, and he gets the tag, and then it's a Fury. And it ultimately leads to then Britt coming back in. I believe Jimmy Hart, or Neidhart, is thrown out of the ring, but he's thrown out of the ring towards Neidhart, towards Jimmy Hart, excuse me, who he chases off, because again, this is also a blow-off of Jimmy Hart betraying the Hart Foundation. So it's a completion of this story. And, you know, he takes the microphone, throws it into Brett while the referee's not looking, who I believe hits Greg Valentine. I can't remember if it's Greg Valentine or Honky Tonk Man. It's one of them. And picks up the 1-2-3. Again, very enjoyable match, but if it could have used so much more time. And again, like I said, think about how more enjoyable this match would be if it had 15 minutes. Another match that could have... Well, hold on. Because our next match is Rick Rude with Bobby Heenan versus The Ultimate Warrior for the WWF Intercontinental Champion. And I was about to say that this match could have used more time as well, but really, it's a Warrior match. No, and now that I think about it, no, this match is perfectly timed for an Ultimate Warrior match. And honestly, I enjoyed it. You know, Warrior was made to look strong. Rude was made to look, you know, like he was going up against an unstoppable force. But he was made to look like he was smarter than Ultimate Warrior. And Rick Rude just has a great smoothness about him. You know, and of course, he's got great charisma that makes you love to hate him. You know, as he sits there and tells you all you high-rolling Atlantic City sweat hogs to quiet down so I can show all the ladies what a real man looks like. It's such a great line. Yeah, I'm glad he's going into the Hall of Fame. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I wish he would have stuck with the WWE because I think he could have been one of those guys to where, as the others left, he could have been another sort of big name for them. But, you know, soon after this, I believe he would, or at least after next year's WrestleMania, he'd be one of the ones who would end up going to WCW. And I guess we should be glad about that because without him going to WCW in the early 90s, we wouldn't have the Dangerous Alliance with Paul Heyman, nor would we have that wonderful story that Paul Heyman told on Stone Cold Story, where it was him, Steve Austin, and Rude, and they're driving, and, you know, Steve Austin keeps using the Lord's name in vain, you know, going, "God damn it, I love goddamn hamburgers. Don't you love goddamn hamburgers? I love goddamn hamburgers. It's one of those goddamn cheesy, juicy ones." And Rude's like, "Pull over the car, Paulie." He says, "Steve." And I'm imitating here, but I'm sure all of you have seen it. But "Steve, could you stop using the Lord's name in vain?" Like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Rick. I didn't know you felt that passionate about it. I will stop using the Lord's name in vain. Thank you. You're goddamn welcome." It's a great story. And I had to tell it. I had to somewhat recreate it. And again, like I said, that was a story that was told on Paul Heyman's appearance on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast, the one that's on the WWE Network, which, by the way, I highly suggest you go watch that. It is absolutely hilarious, especially the stories that are told at the tail end of that episode. But so, yeah, this went just around enough time, and I actually like the screwy end here. It makes sense. It keeps Warrior strong. It shows that the only real way to beat him is to cheat. And, you know, it gives Bobby Heenan, as a manager, his first gold. It gives Rick Rude the Intercontinental Championship, which I think this was his second Intercontinental Championship, I believe. No, second or third. I believe he had a run with it a couple, like right after, because I think he won it from Steamboat before, I think, it then eventually went to Honky Tonk Man, who then held it all the way up until Warrior won it at the SummerSlam before this WrestleMania. I'll have to look back into that. The next two matches aren't another two matches that I think could be off the card. They're really there just to be cooldown matches before the main event. But now you could have had... This could have been a great place to maybe had that concert that was earlier. Or something else. But yeah, these two matches are just, you know. First one is Jim Duggan versus Bad News Brown in a double disqualification due to weapons. That's all I'm going to say about it because it was boring. And Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan with the Brooklyn Brawler in Bobby Heenan's corner. They only went 31 seconds after Bobby Brain Heenan tried to go after Rooster, and Rooster sidestepped and Heenan went into the post. Yeah, that's a show of shows match right there. So yeah, these two I think could have been taken off the card. They're squash matches. They're cooldown matches. They're any other type of thing you can think of to talk about a short match. And that brings us to our main event. The explosion of the Mega Powers as Macho Man Randy Savage defends his WWF Championship versus Hulk Hogan. Unfortunately, what hurts this match is, once again, actually this match could use some more time. If this match went about, again, another 7 minutes, you give this match, I think it would be fine. I think it'd be perfect. Another thing that I think also hurts the match is I don't think there's enough back and forth. It's WWF during this time, and it wasn't just Hogan matches. I know everybody blames Hogan for this, but this was Warrior matches. This was everybody's matches. It was, you know, the face starts off in control, the heel then, it does something to get control, and then it's the whole heel that controls the match until you go home, and the face, reverses momentum, and you build towards the finish, and then you finish it regardless of whether you have the face win or the heel win. Mind you, they still do this formula today. I think they're just better at hiding it. Or at least some are better at hiding it. I think there could have been a bit more back and forth. But again, these were two of the most charismatic superstars on the roster. They're very entertaining. Their entrances were entertaining. They made the match feel big. And, again, it was very enjoyable to watch these two go at each other. Macho Man has great athleticism and can just fly around the ring. Hogan, I don't think Hogan gets enough credit for his power and how much control of that power he has, because everything looks devastating but at the same time safe. He's just got that great charisma that makes moves, even if it's something as simple as a body slam, makes you believe that it hurts. So I found it very enjoyable. It was a very entertaining match. Now, is this match going to be a 5-star wrestling match? By no means. But, there is such a thing of a match being entertaining while not being a great wrestling match. It depends on if you have great characters and if they make the match fun. I mean, with all due respect, the TLC matches, we adore them. We rate them as 5-star matches, but they're not technical wrestling shows. There are people, it's their spot fest, but they're still enjoyable. Look at, Mankind versus Undertaker, Hell in a Cell 98. Again, it's about the charisma, the energy, the story being told, and the fact that Mick Foley keeps getting up has nothing to do with wrestling ability. So, and these two guys can, I think, wrestle. I don't think Hogan is given enough credit for the little ability of wrestling that he can do. And he does do. Is he a Ric Flair? No. Nothing can... I mean, Hogan will never be in the same league as Ric Flair as far as actual wrestling ability. But he can wrestle. And he can wrestle well. And he's got great charisma and great energy. And he can make you believe in the moves that he's doing. So, and again, this was the blow-off of this year-long storyline. Not just of, you know, the blow-off of sort of the mega powers forming at SummerSlam, and then the things that happened that led to their breakup, the jealousy of Macho feeling that Hogan was getting too close with Elizabeth. But this was also a sort of payoff for Hogan as well, because Hogan had been screwed out of the title by Andre and Ted DiBiase on, I believe it was a Saturday night's main event match, to where, you know, you had the crooked referee that looked like Earl Hebner, who had the plastic surgery, and it screwed Hogan. And then, of course, Andre screwed him again in the tournament from WrestleMania 4 with the double countout. And so there was this journey for Hogan to get back to the title. You know, in particular if you were a Hulkamania fan. And so this being the completion of that journey of him finally getting the title back that he really never lost in the first place. But again, that's the roadblock from Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase in the way. And mind you, wasn't even trying to go for the title, but then Macho Man, jealousy getting in the way, and then putting the title up for grabs. Again, this is the completion of many different storylines, and then also at the same time, the starting point for others. And so, in that case, I actually very much enjoy this match. I very much enjoy the story that's put into the match. I think that's underrated in this match is the fact that Elizabeth does what she says. She cares for both men. She protects both men. She protects, she stops Hogan from driving Macho into the post at the same time when Macho reverses it and sends Hogan into the post. She tries to care for him and get him back up, and it's like, it's a little bit too formulaic. It could have used more time, and it could have used more back and forth. But at the same time, this is not a bad match. This is a really good, very entertaining match. But again, like Bret Hart, or should I say, like the Hart Foundation versus Rhythm of Blues, like Mr. Perfect versus the Blue Blazer, this is another match that you give it about 5 to 7 more minutes. It's perfect. Mind you, with fixing some of the other things. So I found it very enjoyable. So, final thoughts. Top moments. Oh, that's a toughie. I can only really think of two. And that is the Piper's Pit, Roddy Piper blowing the fire extinguisher in Morton Downey Jr.'s face. It's a classic moment. And really, if you watch the whole thing, it's really a great payoff. And being that I was a Hulkamaniac at the time, you know, Hogan winning the title back. It was a satisfying match for the tagline that they gave. And Hogan winning the title back finally after over a year of not having it was, and still is to me, a very satisfying storyline finish. Do I have that? Top three matches of the night. Hart Foundation versus Rhythm of Blues, even though it could have definitely used more time. Number three. Number two, and again, this is how great this match was, that it's at number two as far as my favorite matches of the night, but it's so hampered by time. But Mr. Perfect versus the Blue Blazer could have been match of the night, but again, time. But number one, Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage, definitely worth watching. It's a great payoff for multiple storylines, and that's what makes it number one in my book. So overall, there's good wrestling here. There is. It's scattered all over the place. There's... If you take out all the matches that I think you can take out, you know, you're left with... And you give a couple matches some more time, you're left with good matches that are entertaining to great matches. But instead, we have far too many matches squished in with each other. And pretty much every match, or at least every good match, is not given nearly enough time. And thus, you're left wanting more and feeling like you should have gotten more. This is a WrestleMania to where there are things that you can watch, but again, it's just because things aren't giving you enough time, matches aren't given enough time, and therefore you can't get invested in these matches, you find yourself watching this being bored, because like, well, that was a quick finish, I don't feel satisfied at all. And that goes from the beginning to the top. Honestly, you know, if you're going to watch Hogan versus Savage, it might be more entertaining to, instead of putting this on the network and fast-forwarding all the way to this match, to watch the WrestleMania Rewind, where they go through the entire Mega Power storyline. There are a lot of matches that had so much potential, but, and there are some good matches worth watching, but they just don't have enough time. I give WrestleMania 5 a 2.5, pretty much middle. Actually, I'll give it a 2. You know, I'm trying to be generous because I feel I'm being unfair for there, because there are some good matches here that, and they are good entertaining matches, but it's just like they're not given enough time. Too much is squeezed in. It's and plus I had to see Donald Trump's ugly mug the entire 3 hours and 20 minutes. That doesn't help. So 2 out of 5 for me for WrestleMania 5. And yeah, that's an entertaining way to start off WrestleMania month. yeah. Remember though, please leave comments if you can. Dark Mortimer, I did get your comment on the Royal Rumble. I keep forgetting to bring it up. I will bring it up next episode, I promise. But please keep leaving comments. And next time out, we will actually have something a little bit more better. As I'm going to watch a WrestleMania I've actually never seen before. I've seen clips of it, but I've never seen before. Yes, we're going to the mid-90s, and we are going to Anaheim, California for the epic Iron Man match between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. So, yes, that's right. Next time out, we review WrestleMania 12. And until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. C.M. Jew. I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and Jack can't teach that. Why? Because I'm C.M. Jew. Recognize.
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I say that I believe. I stand on my two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And what? This feeling, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but you're free.